Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, the man, the myth, the legend, Jack Piattelli. He is stunning with the shades on. What is this? What are we doing?
Just getting ready for outdoors. It's a beautiful day. Going to be out in the fields later on today.
What is this accent? This is a wild accent. That is. No. Do the Massachusetts accent so I can understand you.
I'm going to go in my car. It's in the parking lot. And I was going to go over and check out Harvard today, but they're not playing. They didn't make the NCAA tournament.
So Harvard Yard.
But very excited. We have a lot of New England teams representing the NCAA tournament, Division 3, 2, 1. It's great for all the players locally who have an opportunity to play in the NCAA because it's not everyday occurrence that players have an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. It's a great experience.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to games and no one calling me all weekend. It's going to be great because they know. If you call me, I'm not... Listen, PSA. For the next 3 weeks, if you call me on the weekend, I will not answer the phone. That's even you. Even though... No. You know what? I'm going to tell this story. I wasn't going to tell this story. I'm coaching and sitting there. We're winning the game. I'm feeling pretty good. My phone starts going off and I have an Apple Watch and my wrist and like the kids are like, Coach, who's calling you? Who's calling you? I'm like, don't worry about it. And I'm just like, I'm not hitting the button because I know the button's going to set you off. So I don't hit the button. So I'm like, why is he calling me? Because when someone calls you six times in a row, you're like, what's wrong? I'm like, hey, I talked to the head coach. I'm like, dude, I got to call him back. Like, he's never called me six times in a row. Something's got to be wrong. And he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. Because obviously it's not that big of a deal. But I call you back and your phone's off. And I'm just like, hey. It's Kyle. I'm sorry. I'm coaching. I'll call you right after the game. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And I'm like panicked. Hang up. Phone rings again. I'm like, all right, I can't do, I got to focus. I look at my phone and it's a text message. And it's like, just need your address. Gonna send you a book. And I'm like losing my mind.
Can I explain?
No, please do.
Okay. So I was at the post office and it closed at 5 o'clock. So I didn't want to have to come back the next morning, which I had to do because I wanted your address. I knew you were coaching, but you know, you coaching is really not that important.
Don't do it.
I kept calling because I had 10 minutes to spare and I wanted to get your address, even though you had given it to me 2 weeks prior and
yes.
And I lost it. And this time it's in my contact information, so I have your address now, so you might be getting a lot of packages from me.
That's very scary. I just want this shirt. I'm going to reiterate. I love this shirt. Right, so
I'll get you one.
Let me get one of those.
All right.
We should probably welcome our guest. Yes. If we've only been talking for like 5 minutes.
I was enjoying
minutes.
This.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. We have Rich McDonough. You call games for the NESCAC and the NSN Network.
And the NE10 as well.
Yeah. Great to have you in. I know that we've corresponded a little bit over email about how this was going to go.
Yeah.
Is it meeting your expectations so far?
I'm done. It's been nice meeting you guys. No, it's been fantastic. I've listened to your podcast, and I expect the back and forth. You guys do real well. It's like Ed McMahon, Johnny Carson. No, well,
thank
working
you.
It.
Oh, my God. Which one
so
am
I'm
I?
Johnny Carson. He's Ed McMahon. That's for sure.
Hi-oh.
If you really think that's what the dynamic is, man,
oh, yeah, no
we need
question
to have a talk.
There we go.
You're wearing sunglasses still.
And it's fantastic.
We're just going to let this go. You know what?
Keep well, you're not looking very good today. That's why I put
Thanks.
Them on.
Appreciate you know? It. So I know. I'm aware how rough I'm looking after a rough loss.
Well, it's, Jack, it's you and great. I have seen each other on the sidelines. I already knew you're all heart, man.
Oh, thanks. There I appreciate go. That.
No
it's
problem.
Great having you in studio, too.
You bet, man.
We love
Thank
having
you.
The cut our guests in studio.
No doubt.
100%. And thanks for coming up.
Delighted.
I watch a ton of NESCAC. I know that you call a ton of NESCAC.
Yep.
What drew you to that, and how did you get into broadcasting lacrosse?
Well, I'll give you the short story on getting involved on TV.
Sure.
And then we can get into some other DNA lineage type of thing.
Absolutely.
I'm a lacrosse junkie. I think we all are. And I was doing some work in southern New Hampshire where I live. I think a bunch of us live in New Hampshire.
Central.
Around here. Yeah. And I'm in Hollis.
Okay.
And I got involved calling for Nashua ETV, which is a regional public television station. But they do a real good job of covering local sports, high school. I did the hockey finals. I did even the junior high school Nashua City Championship, which was a blast. And I've gotten to work with Tom King, who you may know. He's with the Nashua Telegraph, and John Sullivan. And we've had real good experience. And then I was sitting there going, it was all primer for me doing some lacrosse for them this spring and beyond maybe. And I'd like to see these games anyway, so why not get together and call the games? So I got involved. In a nutshell, I was doing PA for football games for my son, who's at Bishop Gurdon. As we said, he's a goalie, and he's also starting quarterback this year. And I was sitting there going, I'm enjoying this. My wife is looking at me going, he's enjoying this. What can I do? So I looked up a couple of the regional networks and found that one of my old dear friends, 30-year-long friend, who is a teacher at one of the academies in Vermont, had an AD who started Northeast Sports Network. So I said, hey, can you put us in touch? And she said, sure, but why? And I told her why. And I said, am I crazy? And she goes, well, you're a goalie. You might be crazy.
Yeah.
You're born that way. Yeah. But this is not crazy. And sure, I'll put you together. And by that afternoon, they asked me to do Northeast 10 and NESCAC work. And the rest is history and progress, shall we say.
What's your lacrosse background?
My lacrosse, I was born in Maryland. I mean, I grew up in Maryland. I was born actually.
Yeah, you had a Maryland number, and I was like, oh, yeah. God, it's a Maryland guy? I didn't know that.
I'm not giving up my 301. I've been up in Hollis for 8 years, but we moved up from Maryland. So I grew up in Maryland, and that probably should be the end of the answer, right? I grew up in Maryland, lacrosse. Boom. Right. But I always saw the game, and I was a baseball guy, football, basketball, and this wild game that the Kiwanis Leagues were playing. And I'm like, what can I do? What is that game? I got to play. And then my neighbor had a stick, and I was fascinated by the whole thing. But then we up and moved to Connecticut, to Fairfield County, Connecticut. And that was 1979. I'm dating myself here with you, Jack. And that's where I first picked up my first stick, was in 79. It was that old brine with the leathers and the old folks who did the weaving in the factories here in Boston. Did those beautiful sticks in the 70s and early 80s before we went high tech and stuff like that. So anyway, I got hooked. I was a middie, and then I got moved to the goal position as a sophomore, and I hated it. I was screaming and kicking. And I had a great coach named Ed Craver, who has Longmeadow DNA and Springfield College. There's another coaching DNA. You know that from that Western Massachusetts footprint. But lucky me, I found Craver, and he put me in the goal because – he said, you're quick, and we need somebody back there who's crazy. And so it stuck. And then 2 years later, I'm getting recruited by Princeton and Hopkins. And I went to Georgetown out of a small school. And that's kind of the beginning of the lacrosse evolution. And I ended up I said no to Hopkins, which probably was a good idea because Quint Kesenick came in the year after I did. Might have been the end of my goaltending career.
Yeah.
Terrific player, obviously. And Petro would have been my teammate. And he and I have talked about it. And I wore 43. And he goes, no, Coach Mack, that wouldn't have worked. Because he wore 43.
Right.
He's a great dude. But I ended up transferring to Fairfield University, where I had my Tilton head coach named Andy Sheffer, who led the country in scoring at UMass when he was one of Garber's Gorillas back in the day. And he and I are friends to this day. And he's come up and done my Hollis Brookline youth camp. He's coaching down in Florida now. So that's a quick study. We moved up from Maryland 8 years ago. I had coached in BLC and Madlax. I was head coach of St. John's, which, you know, is national now in scope. We were pretty darn good. It means I got to coach against Rabel 5 times. That was very difficult. Yeah. And then I was head coach at Hollis Brookline and an assistant and Tomahawks for several years. So, and I'm out of the coaching ranks, which is a breather. And I ended up doing this because I needed to fill some weekend time.
Yeah.
And some Thursday time. I'm kind of a pencil head for lacrosse. I like looking at stuff. I've coached forever. I started coaching in 88 when I was finishing at Fairfield U, and I just got hooked, you know, and that was in Fairfield County, Connecticut, and lots of those kids, you know, what a hotbed that's become.
Yeah.
But I still sit there when I watch games, and it drives my sons crazy, and I stop, and I rewind, and I do it in slow frame, et cetera, et cetera. So I still like to look at it through that kind of microscopic lens and analyze it. So what do? I get some energy out and get in the booth. And it's been a lot of fun. I mean, you're here on camera and on the mic, but you enjoy it, right?
Sure.
And it's a way to add a layer to your game. You're already excellent recruiting and player development and fun.
Right.
And this is part of it.
Sure.
So if you're really enjoying the game, if you're into the game and like to analyze it, and then you have an opportunity to have fun on TV on the weekend, and it's more like radio because you never see me.
Right.
It's probably a good thing. But
better for Kyle.
But it sure is fun. I'm going to get some sunglasses on the first televised. So anyway, that's where I come from. And sure, if somebody flexes from a 1.4 into a 2.3 and then they go above GLE, for example, in order to get a cross crease feed,
right?
I'll call that out. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
And I think it helps people who are just consumers.
Right.
Get some more information about the game.
Because you did do that in a game, and I was like, oh, that's different.
Yeah.
So
your challenge, because you do high school, right?
I just did my first high school lacrosse game last night.
So you do high school, you do Northeast 10, you do NESCAC, mm-hmm. is knowing your audience, right? Because high school, probably not as educated as maybe the folks that are watching the college games. So do you change your style or pass certain information on to the high school audience versus the college audience?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really authoritative question. Yes, and I called the Bishop Girton girls hosting Notre Dame Hingham last night. And Notre Dame Hingham, D2 here in Massachusetts, but they've already beaten Wellesley and Westwood. They're to be reckoned with and probably the favorites to go D2 all the way. And they beat Bishop Girton pretty handily after it was nip and tuck. But sure, I know who my audience is because I'm a Bishop Girton parent, for one thing. But right. I've coached high school. I've coached U4, U7, you name it. And so what I think I was doing was more educational, et cetera, going down the alley, going through the X, which is behind the goal, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Because somebody's grandmother is watching down in Florida.
Sure.
And look, this is a wonderful thing,
right,
that we're able to stream these good games. And it was a good game. And right. How can I help? I've been Coach Mac forever, right? And I've got kids in Maryland who are now playing in NESCAC. And you know, Connor Segretti scored 2 goals last night for Bentley. Third time was the charm for Adelphi last night. And his father has reached out to me. And it's really a nice thing. But how can I help coach parents, grandparents, et cetera, families who are listening from elsewhere and maybe bring the game up a level in terms of information, knowledge, et cetera? And then, of course, get animated when somebody makes a great drive or puts it in the left and goes full cross and then picks the back corner, right? It's fun to watch. I still love it. I'm still Coach Mac, and I'm still a player mentally. So sure, I get going when something great happens like that. Or, like you brought up a while ago, let's say somebody doesn't get both knuckles, sets of knuckles on the ground, 2 butts to the ground, et cetera, on a ground ball.
Yeah,
I'll just mention it. Or a goaltender doesn't close and seal the pipe. I'll say it and let people know that that's something to think about when they're playing some ball in the backyard and they can have a good discussion with players. And you do this as a coach. You do this as a coach. I can't help it after all these years. So I try to add that into the high school level. College level, people love the fact that somebody's scoring 110 points a game. And he had 6 assists in the last game, et cetera, et cetera. And I knew that he played BLC or Madlax in the DMV, or he played for Bullis. People love that. So I try to do my homework, et cetera. But it is a different beast. It's more mechanics on the high school level. There's some mechanics. When you're, like I called Tufts Middlebury the other day, lots of mechanics, but they do so many things so well that right. stuff isn't necessary.
So let's talk about that game real quick.
Sure.
It was, I think, 8-0? For Middlebury scored. It was probably more.
It was 10.
It was 10.
It was but 10
I,
to 1.
When I finally tuned got in. It. Within 5 minutes, it was 6-0. And then I was like, oh no. And I'm trying to watch the game. And I can't keep watching it because it's just straight up turnover, goal.
Yeah.
What do you adjust to in the booth when you're calling a game that is, it was a lopsided game. How do you adjust what you're doing?
That's a question that I'm beginning to learn the answer to, because this is my rookie season on the mic in any capacity. And when we're all rookies, whatever we're doing, you're developing your own sets of questions and answers en route. So if I listen to my first broadcasts in December and January basketball, I shake my head. So now, confronted with a juggernaut in Tufts the other day that's laying waste to a really good Middlebury team.
Middlebury is very good.
They're loaded.
Yes.
And they were just having a day, and Middlebury didn't have the day. So I started focusing on the mechanics of what Tufts started to do, right? Talk about the second and third role players who were, and I don't know that I tried to do this, but it was happening in front of me, so I paid attention to it. Somebody else, the fourth line or something like that, would come in, and they're producing, and I found that way down on the roster and their stat list, wow, they had 14 people in double figures, and here we get to call him out for playing some serious ball when they've got two All-Americans on attack. So that's how I kind of adjusted. And then you talk about Middlebury. What can they do to get going? Win a faceoff. Monroe wasn't having a good first half, and then he started playing hot at the faceoff X in the second half. And I think that helps the audience stick with it. It certainly helps me stick with it, mm-hmm. Is paying attention to some of the things that we know as coaches and players you can do to get back in the game. Because it's 10-1. What if you score three in a row? You're back in it. And Tufts did that in their first game. They were down. I mean, Middlebury did that in their first game, April 1st. Right. And they rattled off 6 of 7, and they were back in within four. And again, though, that's a dynamic team in Tufts. So that's kind of how I kind of modulated my way through it. Otherwise, it would have just been a lopsided bore. And I think I read enough and I prepared enough, so I had some facts that were digestible by the audience at large. And then I could talk about the peanut gallery and the parents I talked to across the way, and I was waving to them. It's little things like that go a long way. And I didn't know that 2 months ago.
Yeah, talk about the preparation. Like, how much do you put the time in to prepare for the games and getting to know the rosters and obviously their win-loss record, mm-hmm. and coaches and so on and so forth?
Well, I'm kind of weird. I like doing this stuff. I really do. I would stay up till 2 in the morning, even when I was coaching Hollis Brookline, and just watch tape and slow-mo, look for tendencies. Who carries a butt end 6 inches exposed? We're going to lift check that, right? It works. So a rule of thumb is generally saying 2 hours for every 1 hour you're in the booth. I don't think I'm very good yet, so... And I also, like I said, I enjoy the thing. I found myself doing 3 hours or more per hour in the booth. One, because I like it. Two, I'm afraid that I don't know enough and I want to pack it. I'm also a lawyer, so I'm kind of assiduous about the research. Now, I'm long recovered lawyer, thank God, and been in commercial real estate for a long time. But I probably over-prepare, Jack, and I don't know that it's a bad thing. I think eventually it'll be unnecessary. But I watched segments of 6 games to prepare for Tufts Middlebury or in the whole NESCAC weekend. Quarter here, you watch them versus different teams. How do they adapt to different styles? Tufts doesn't have to adapt to anybody's style because they will ram it down the throat, and that's their style. So I do prepare a lot, and I'm looking at the possibly calling the quarterfinal and semifinal if Tufts holds serve, and a lot of us think they will. And it'd be cool to cover a national semifinal, but it means I've got to learn 6 teams who might flow through to that next weekend. So I'm 3 to 4 hours per hour. But the good thing is, Jack, that I like it and gets me out of the house or in the house, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, good for you. It keeps us young, too.
I think it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The question I have for you is, when you're preparing for these games, you're preparing, obviously, knowing all the different players on the field, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But you also, like, tough situation. You got to know some of the players that don't play a lot as well.
Yeah.
And the thing that I'd like to do, and I think the tendencies is when they call a game, they call more of the offensive plays and don't give shout-outs to, let's say, a Gavin Adler, who's one of the best defenders in number one overall pick in the BLL. If you watch his game, the way he picks up the ground balls and intercepts passes and plays.
He's an ISL guy, isn't he?
No, he's not. He's from New Jersey.
Okay.
And in the way he plays one-on-one defense, okay. I think that to me is so intriguing, watching a defender just dominate on the field. And I don't think the little things, the important things in the game are talked about enough, to your point, Kyle. Instead of talking about having lunch with somebody, let's really dissect what kind of players they have and what their role is, and you know how they're doing. And we tend to want to talk about the flashy play instead of the solid defense or the great ground ball.
Right. Well, we saw Rusty Gate the other day, which was startling at full clip as Middlebury tried to clear, and He was falling behind. He did try the rusty gate, and you could hear the clank, and the ball went on the. That was stunning. So, sure, we can talk about a flashy play, but this is good stuff from you because I'm a goalie, which means I love good defenders, right? And we have all these specialists these days.
Yeah.
The shorties. That was non-existent when I played.
Right.
And even as recently as 6, 7, 10 years ago coaching. But now it's a specialty. But what I like seeing is these individual battles. And I'm kind of old school, Bobby Scott.
Sure.
Which is why I call the way out top above the restraining. I still call it the front porch. It just baked into me. So, but I will say a good matchup. And I'll let folks know that he's controlling him in the alley with his right fist, okay? And every so often, he gave his ball carrier a tap on the shoulder, say, thou shalt not go back topside on me, right? Or we call out, hey, he split the field beautifully by addressing the ball and taking his man all the way to the right alley. And my old phrase, coaching kids, and I think it's a good one, is better there he is than there he goes, right?
Right, right.
And that's playing good defense. People think you got to go harass, but all of a sudden, if you're 30 yards away from the cage and you're vulnerable with a 20-yard slide, you've put yourself in trouble. So these are nice things to mention from the booth versus just elevating over GLE and getting a question mark, rollback, et cetera, a la Rob Pinnell and that sort of thing, because I think the mechanics of good defense, or if you get into a 3-3, because somebody's got a good roll going, and you go into the old Tierney shape of a 3-3 and great communication, call that out. I think it makes it more fun. It certainly keeps me engaged from the booth rather than just watch that. But you don't want to start talking about piano playing right. and whatnot. I mean, I love this personal stories. I love my players, and they're still – my old St. John's guys still talk to me, which is a good thing. It means I did something right. But – calling those defensive out, calling the slides, preparing the audience for the slide. Or we saw this in the Maryland-Ohio State semi maybe 5 years ago, something like that. Maryland didn't slide at all. And yeah. I think the capstone was, go ahead, beat us with your middies. We're going to beat you in the rest of the game. And that's exactly what happened. But I like discussing that with the audience, and I'm all alone up there so far. And I'm trying to do play-by-play and color, maybe give some knowledge. I think there's good stuff in here. You can't use it all, though.
No,
and
right.
You kind of implied that a while ago. Otherwise, you get a computer drop, and then it's too much. It's an avalanche of information. It's like, hey, McDonough, shut up.
Yeah, and then
like
you,
right now.
then you lose track of the game. If especially where you're doing play-by-play and color, that's very challenging to be able to call the players' names out.
And you know that.
Yeah, and then explaining what they just did.
Yeah.
But it's a great educational piece.
I think so.
It's actually a lot like coaching, where if you're coaching and you run the box, you can't actually do much else. And I always, because I run the box, and then I go, oh, wait, but do that. And then we don't have our line set. And I'm like, I got to go set the lines. So then you set the lines, and you're just constantly resetting and going back. It's like you have to get into a ability, like a flow of calling. I mean, listen, the podcast is the same way, man. Like we have to get into a relationship where like we're trading time on the mic. We're talking to the guest equally, but also if he's on a roll, he's on a roll. If I'm on a roll, I'm on a roll. So we have to let that happen naturally.
Well, if you really want to run the box in this podcast, then you got to do the rest of the podcast with your back to the mic. You
know, because no one's going to listen.
When Cabell Maddox, who runs Madlax down in the DMV there, old friend of mine, he was at my wedding and everything, and we communicate every so often, he hired me to coach goalies at St. John's and run the box. And I didn't know much about the box because I was always on the field.
Sure.
And I'm like, once I got into it, I'm like, man, this is really difficult. And he turns over to me and he goes, Mac, keep your back to the field, stop chatting with the players, et cetera, and run the box. And you elevate to a higher level of lacrosse. You don't have to do a whole lot of box management, but in high school and middle school, and you have to do a lot because the kids just want to go.
But yeah, I think
in the wrong place.
With you announcing and then working the box, you got to recognize what your responsibilities are.
Correct.
And focus on the job at task. And
right.
I remember doing some games and working the box, and after the game, whether I was calling a game or working the box, I felt I had just played the game. I was totally exhausted.
It's tapping, man.
You're exhausted after a game.
Right. And I had an interesting discussion, two of them, on these planes with two of your former guests who've become friends, because I called a bunch of St. Michael's games, Alex Smith, and right down the road, Chris Fifes, one of my best friend's kids, my buddy Roz, who I, back in Connecticut, we went to high school together when I first picked up that stick, and her son just finished his career at UVM. But I got to talk to Fifes and stuff about this, and Alex Smith, who I think is a real cerebral coach, and, you know, about the pecking order. You've got to do your job. It's a Belichick thing. And no surprises, daughter's coaching Holy Cross. But you have to keep it. We can all talk offline, right, about the mechanics of what was happening out there. But don't do it. Know your role. Don't do it in front of the bench, et cetera, et cetera. We can all disagree. And then we'll figure out how to better operate organically later. Yeah. Like, you guys have perfect 1-2 punch going on here. How do we emulate that sort of 1-2 punch when we're on the field, on the sidelines?
It's more like one punch.
One punch, okay. One punch Piatelli.
Hey, assists.
Wasn't he a fighter in the 1910 or something like that?
Assists count the same as goals.
Yeah,
yes, they do.
Assists count the same as goals.
They do.
And I actually, so when I called a couple games for the Cannons, and I worked with John Mita Perel, and he, I told him, I was like, hey, man, I've never done this before, but I know these teams. I know these players. I know what I'm doing.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I know. You wouldn't be here if you didn't know that.
Right.
And he's like, all right, here's the deal. My job is to just throw you the ball, and you have to dunk it. That's all you got to do. You just got to dunk it. You don't have to do, you don't have to play. He's like, you don't have to play defense. You don't have to do any of that other stuff.
I like that.
Just dunk it. And I had an amazing time, and we called the game, because they used to play at Harvard. We called the game, right. We called the game with no monitor, no stats, no phones. And it's good. It's on YouTube. They played against the Ohio Machine. I remember it very well. And I had people texting me after the game. They're like, did you call that game? I was like, yeah. And they're like, I thought I heard your voice. And I was like, yeah. And what do you think was different? And they're like, hey, you just sounded like you knew what you were talking about. And I'm like, oh, great. So I never sounded like I know what I'm talking about, which I knew you'd
love. But you were forced into laser focus.
Yeah. You don't have a choice. I mean, you're literally at Harvard. They play at Jordan Field now. It's a little different. But, like, it's just, we were all the way up in the Stone Stadium.
Right.
Like, I'm not even in a chair. I'm like, it was like a stool, like, retrofitted. I don't have a back. I'm just there, and I'm just like, okay, all right. And I'm watching. We have, again, I want to reiterate this. We have no monitor, which I know, like, is like a common, you have to have the monitor. You got to, we had a cough button. That was the highest tech thing we had.
That's a great tech thing, though.
It is. It actually came in handy a couple times. And people that are maybe listening to the podcast that kind of don't know what that is, if you have to cough when you're calling a game, you know, you have a button that you can push, and it just mutes everything.
Right.
And you can kind of go to the side and cough. Well, we have a producer that lets us do that.
Well, I'll tell you, we have one for Nashua ETV, Pete Johnson, who's terrific. That's because he's a Steelers fan, and he'll let you know at any time.
Yeah.
But the boom on your headset swings up, and it cuts off the audio feed instantly.
Oh.
So if midwinter in New Hampshire, you're going to have the sniffles, you're going to have a scratchy throat. But it sounds like you were living large at Harvard. I got to tell you, I called a number of the St. Mike's men's and women's game, and starting in early March and then through April, which is still winter in northern Vermont.
Yeah, it is.
And I did it in sideways sleet, in snow, and they don't have a booth. What they have is a steel scaffold that you could paint your house with. And then I'm up 30 feet in the air, and I can see Mount Mansfield right in the background there. And you can hear the wind just whipping across.
Oh.
And it's blowing the snot out of me. And look, I'm Irish. I sniffle during the winter.
Yeah.
And so I what do? You say, folks, I'm not broadcasting from the top of Mount Mansfield, which became a recurring theme because that was the weather even at the end of April up there.
Yeah.
But you adapt, and you can't, you don't have a monitor. You can't.
Right.
I went and got a boom monitor stand, which helped. But then you can't see it because of the sunlight.
Right.
So you have to go with what you know. You have to go with the gut instincts. The great guy, sports information director for St. Michael's up there, Kessler, and he was able to feed me stats as often as I could. But if you listen on the tape, and don't, but you can hear the wind whipping, and you can hear my paper, et cetera, et cetera. So what do you do? I started getting my portfolio, and you can see, what's it covered with?
tape.
Duct tape. I started duct taping my prep sheets to the thing. And then I learned use 100 pieces of scotch tape because the duct tape blacks out what you just wrote down.
Right.
And but these are things you learn. It's kind of like the evolution of anything. Playing lacrosse, coaching lacrosse, teaching a kid how to get recruited. What did I do? How can I do it better? But technology is a big thing. And excuse me, I don't have a cough button here. But I was at Tufts last weekend for the whole NESCAC quad there.
Yep.
And the technology is phenomenal. Their wireless mesh is all over campus. I brought my laptop. They had a real nice table set up. And the communications director was right next to me. And I said, the live stats actually were live stats. I mean, right. A goal happened and you see the score happen. Yep. And it's instant with the assist, et cetera, et cetera. And I got to tell you, it makes a huge difference. Because
sure.
When and you guys have both done this, when you're at a certain field level, you can't see through the trees. You might be able to see who shot it, yeah. But you couldn't see the feed from opposite side of the field. And you sit there and guess. And you try to chew up a little time and then maybe get some information, wait for the PA announcer to help you out. But Tufts, my goodness, the way they work that system, the technology, it changes the entire dynamic because then I'm able to focus more on players and structure, et cetera, and maybe even the feel of the game. And I think that's part of evolution in my own game as a rookie. And I'm glad you're listening to that because I encourage criticism.
No.
So I can get better at this and do a better job for you.
You know, it's funny you mentioned all those like little things that maybe like the layperson doesn't know about or someone that has never called a game or even people who have never coached a game or anything like that. One of the things that I used to do at Inside the Cross was I had rules for when I would cover a game. I'm like, okay. And I've said this on the podcast before. If it's freezing outside and there's no cover, ugh, I'm not coming to your game. It's just not happening. It could be the biggest game in the world. I can watch it. Now the technology is I get a better feel of what's happening from watching it on TV because my whole stance when I cover games is I'm an analytical first,
right?
Journalism report second. So right. That's just how I'm wired. I've tried to redo it. It doesn't work. It's just how my brain works, right? So I would have like a rank of places that I would like to go. Like, all right, I'll go to BU. And what the differentiating factor is, and I'm going to spoil this for people that don't know a ton about how journalism and all that stuff works. If your SID is awesome, I'm in. Like I could list off the best SIDs and the worst ones if I wanted to in college lacrosse right now. And they do so much unseen work.
It's incredible.
It really is. And it's funny because like I got this reputation for being an SID hater. And I'm like, no. I just want you to do it so my job's easier so I can make this look better. It's not that I'm mad at you. It's like, please give me this information so what I do is more impactful.
Right.
Right? It's very much a symbiotic relationship. And if you don't have that when you're watching a game, it's like you're stranded. Right, you're one man on an island, which is why I'm so fascinated that you really like calling games singly, because I did it and I couldn't imagine doing it again. I would love to do it with Jack because like he would be great at play by play and he'd probably keep the jokes down to a somewhat of a minimum.
I can already tell that.
Maybe he'd double. Happening.
That's not my nature.
Oh, when I called you One Punch Piatelli from 1910, you liked that.
He loved it.
But Kyle, last night, he's going to reuse it. That's the standard.
Yeah.
I did a 2-color and P2P in the box last night with Tom King, who's fantastic because he is a walking encyclopedia of every sport in New England. And he knew the father of the player, for example, at Pinkerton Academy, who scored the winning run in the baseball game in 1989, and et cetera. Now Johnny is playing on the lacrosse field, and he's got the golden voice. It's smooth. He changes inflections, et cetera, et cetera. And then he's also got a great sense of humor to boot, and we work really well together. That's a wonderful thing. I do color when John Collins calls because he is the best. I mean, I think he covered Patriots for some time, and that allows me the ability to do some recon on what players are going where. Like I mentioned, thanks to you, buddy, when I was calling St. Michael's, one of the Reyes brothers is on there for St. Mike's, but his brother, the Zavarian brothers, I believe, is going to play for Fifes. And you had, I think you had mentioned in one of your articles that his coach was 3D, and that's the assistant at UVM.
Yes.
Beautiful pipeline, but it allowed me to get some color in there. But, of course, that game I was doing both. So I segment color over here, facts to the left, et cetera, et cetera. And it helps me stay tethered. But when you're talking about your SIDs, Kessler up there at SMC is fantastic.
Yeah.
And what are they doing? I think they're giving you a keel for your boat, et cetera.
Right.
Because the keel of that boat, whether it's a coaching effort, playing effort, is your knowledge and how many reps have you put in, right?
Sure.
You got to own it. And that's why I'm trying to put in 4 hours for every one right now and get myself a better system. I brought this just because I wanted you guys to see the difference between.
Right.
There are my notes. There's Coach Mack right now for the Middlebury, right?
Okay.
And there's the guy who calls the Princeton Tigers. I talked to him the other day, and he's helping me get organized so I can go up a notch, right? Yep. His spotter board is fantastic. There's Tufts because it's a mile long. They have 55 guys on their roster.
Right.
But you can see I was doing all the same things this professional does, and he gets on ESPN on the weekends when he calls Sean Cameron having himself a day last weekend. And so all my thought processes were correct. That was a relief, actually, because he has the material identified in the same order,
right?
Et cetera, et cetera. But now he's kindly sent me his Word and Adobe versions
like a template
of this. And he's like, and I think that's common to lacrosse, guys. You know this. I reached out because he's got a website for media. It's him promoting himself so he can get more gigs, and he's really good at what he does. But I pinged him, and instantly he came back and said, thank you for contacting me. How can I help? And now he's looking at my reels to help me get better at this because, you know, you're going to do it halfway or whole way.
Right,
let's try to do it. You do that as a coach. You do that as a coach. You guys do the journal and the broadcasts, which are really informative. And it's because you care and because you've done enough reps and thought it through enough to own it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do the same thing.
That's interesting because that actually applies to writing too.
It does.
It's actually the same thing. And I launched a newsletter, like 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was scared to do it. I was still working inside the cross. I was like, I don't know what this is going to be, but I just need like to get this off my chest. I need my own platform. Right.
Right.
So I reach out to a guy, he now runs Extra Points, which is a kind of a famous newsletter now about like college alignments and divisions.
Right.
And I reached out to him, and I reached out to a guy who writes about soccer for ESPN, just randomly. He did a podcast I listened to. I was like, this guy's awesome. I got to talk to him.
Sure.
So I reached out, and I ended up having hour-long conversations with both of them.
Right.
And I was like, thank you so much for just taking an hour. I mean, and the lesson from that I took was not the things that they said, but the fact that they were kind enough to do that. And when people reach out to me for writing advice and how do I get into lacrosse, I'm like, okay, well, here's how you do it. And unfortunately, I've had to tell people a couple times, like, hey, I just think you need more reps.
Right.
And it's like, before I had that conversation with those two guys, I probably would have said it in not a way that's very constructive. I would have been like, not good enough.
Well, that's why you got some like gray that in your beard by this
it's
point.
True.
A little wisdom
we're
is coming.
We're getting a little smarter, less dumber. And I think that's kind of one of the lessons of when you're trying a new thing, ask for help. Don't just like, it's the same thing with coaching. Like, oh, you're going to go play LSM today. But coach, I've been a close defender for 10 years. Yeah, but we think that you have the ability to do it and we're going to try it. Okay. And just like, we'll coach you through it.
Right.
I feel like that's one of the most common ones. Just the easy example. And it might work and it might not.
Right.
But if you tell them that it can work.
Right.
It's more apt to work.
And that's how I am with new goalies. And I still coach goalies. And I'm proud to say that every goalie I've ever had play and commit to the position, everybody tries it here and there, have either made all league or all state in all these years I've been coaching. And that feels pretty good.
Sure.
But it's the same process. And I think we're touching on something that is, I think, special to our game here.
Yeah.
We call it the creator's game. And I take it really seriously. And I know you guys do. Just about everybody we ever meet, whether it's parents, players, coaches, we're paying it back and paying it forward a lot. I know it's a trite, often used expression, but it really, the rubber meets the road in this game. And I played football and every other sport. And lacrosse, I think we're all really good caretakers of a beautiful sport. And that's why I've got three generations of people still talking to me. It's why I got new friends and why this kind of capstone to a wonderful career for me in the game, whether as a player, coach, et cetera, et cetera. It's very special, and that helps us get more reps, whether it's on the field, in the booth, with you guys here. And that's why, and it keeps you young.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's kind of because a lot of this comes from our hearts.
Right, yeah.
That's why our kids are so special.
We may not be able to react like we were 18, but we can still think like we're 18.
I'm planning to. Yeah. I signed up for Team Ireland's 50-plus team.
Good for you.
Let's get Coach Mac back in the cage.
You're a brave man. You're a brave man.
I led the program out by saying I'm crazy.
Yeah.
All right. That's actually a great note to end on. I think I can't believe we're like that felt like 5 minutes.
Did it really just go?
Yes.
Holy smokes.
We're past 45. That's wild.
We should do a regular view from the booth with Coach Mac.
We'll do it again. We'll do it. Hey, we have people back. We love to have repeat guests.
This is great, man.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you guys for the service that you provide.
Oh,
I mean,
appreciate that.
For lacrosse pinheads, yeah. I like it.
Oh, thank you.
I find it soothing. It's better than white noise. You guys are terrific.
Well, thanks so much. Really appreciate you coming on today, coming into the studio.
All right. Well, brothers.
Great.
Appreciate it.
Friends for life.
All right, fellas.
All right. Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. See you next time.